Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. And of course, we are in this dangerous situation where major powers are coming closer to one another, and the sounds of peace are rather distant. I have to say, right off the bat, that you have to be careful, because in understanding what is going on in Ukraine, because we now have the fog of war, and the fog of war is, I'd have to say, the fog is winning. If you want to know what's going on for the absolute truth and with no confusion, of course, you must follow the mainstream media, because they do know what is absolutely true. And they make no mistakes, and they are fact-checking and a highly responsible bunch of people, no doubt, or so we are told. And the Taylor Report, of course, as I said last week, we don't follow the mainstream media any more than we follow the mainstream highways. We prefer the blue highway. There's a very good book by William Least Heat Moon called Blue Highways, and I do recommend it. His point was that you kind of understand America, if you take the blue highways, those are the two lanes rather than the superhighways. But I do want, in order that you can stay safe, I urge you to, of course, go to the four lanes and the superhighways, and the mainstream media, who will never guide you wrong, because if you repeat what they say, you'll be fine. I want to congratulate anybody who's speaking out for peace. We should point out the Hamilton Coalition Against the War has had a good statement. The Canadian Peace Congress.ca, CanadianPeaceCongress.ca has a statement. And then leading into what kind of interesting phenomena in terms of those who want peace. You remember the UN General Assembly urged peace, and a had a motion, and the headlines in the paper were that it condemned Russia's aggression, invasion of Ukraine. I urge people to read the text, actually, because, of course, it talks about how this matter has got to be resolved. And they call for dialogue, and they call for diplomacy. And here's a word: de-escalation. I say that because I'm not seeing a lot of de-escalation, not from the Canadian political class, such as they are. That was in the General Assembly resolution. Two parties have spoken up in who are somewhat better known, and as we call these mainstream circles. One is the Democratic Socialists of America. And they have been attacked by the U.S., the White House, and various journals, because they raised the question, which is, of course, is, you might call it, the sane question about our own role, that is, the role of the West in this crisis, the one that is so dangerous. They want to, because after all, you can only control your own, you only have any legitimate power within your own state. So the Democratic Socialists, while they condemned Russia for the invasion, they also said they thought that the North Atlantic Treaty Organization had played a bad role, had contributed. And this is what has brought down wrath on the heads of the Democratic Socialists of America. They seem to be weathering it well. I saw one of their spokesman recently, spokesperson on the Lania Kalix program. And he's in there attacking us is because they know there's something to what we say, and that we probably are close to the sentiment of many Americans who've been watching this unfold. And besides that, it's when you're against NATO, which they always have been. He said, you know, it's not news that they have been opposed to NATO's rather frisky behavior in East Europe. And so why would they change that? If that's their opinion, that's their opinion, saying that the eastward expansion of NATO was extremely dangerous. And now they are, and of course they decided to repeat that. He invoked the name of Debs, Eugene Debs, who opposed America's involvement in World War I. And I'm sure our listeners know Eugene Debs is a certified saint amongst socialists or anti-imperialists, anti-capitalist people around the world, a fantastic labor organizer who later became the voice of the American socialism. He was put in prison for a long stretch, actually, for opposing America's going into the First World War. Anyway, my hat is off to the Democratic Socialists of America. And the leader of the Quebec Green Party, who has been a guest on the Taylor Report, has spoken out, and I shouldn't just say the leader, he speaks for the Green Party of Quebec. And again, after all, these people are merely being consistent with their principles and also with their previous position. And rather than looking over the fence and talking about what other states should do to correct themselves, which is, of course, a hegemonic position and an arrogant position, bigoted in many ways, they say, let's look into for the mote in our own eye and see how we may have, if there's anything we might do to lessen tensions in the world, particularly amongst superpowers. And so the Green Party of Quebec simply said that they thought, they too, as far as I know, they condemned Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which they call, what is it, a military operation, whatever it is. At any rate, the movement of Russian troops into Ukraine. They condemn it, but they want to know how we're going to get out of this situation with Ukraine intact and people's lives saved. There's a great deal of talk, as there always are, always is in wartime and moments like these, a great deal of appeal to people's emotions and a great deal of talk about who's dying and who's in pain. And we should all do what we can to prevent it and lessen it. Which brings me back to you know, the phrase from originally Leo Tolstoy, what's to do? Do what? And let's go back to the General Assembly. United Nations General Assembly said, has to be dialogue, has to be de-escalation, has to be diplomacy. They did not say anything. The General Assembly resolution, which is the one that now all editorialists and political leaders are running around the room, holding it above their heads, loudly saying, General Assembly condemns Russia. It said these other things. And one thing it didn't say was sanctions. And yet sanctions is the magic word. Biden is announcing sanctions. He's sanctioning this. He's sanctioning that. Does a week go by that the U.S. does not sanction somebody and do it in a most arrogant, overbearing way, saying, oh, we sanction you. You're poor, but we're going to make you poorer. I think the world's pretty tired of that business. Let's note right here, this is, you're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT, 89.5 FM. Brazil says, Brazil's kind of a big country. Brazil says they're not going to join in this sanction, and not, because remember, a sanction is aimed, it's allegedly is aimed at one party, but it's also aimed at any party that deals with the one named. So this is how great powers who sanction people scare the bejesus out of other countries and get their way over them, is by saying, I'm going to sanction you. And the other, and he looks around and others are afraid to contradict because it's a high price, perhaps. At any rate, Brazil, big country, says, no, we're not going to go along with that. And Mexico. Mexico is a North American country. It's part of our great trade pact. You must remember that when we made the big deal in the trade pact, and please don't ask me to explain what happened. I noticed even the prime minister appeared nonplussed when they signed. He had this look like on his face, like, I don't know what we just did. Let's go to lunch. But at any rate, that pact was signed with Mexico. That's Mexico is a major part of our North American trade. And we're the big boss, or we stand near the big boss, Washington. Mexico said, no, they're not going to be part of joining the sanctions. So when they, I don't mind anybody reporting, and I'm sure, again, four-lane highway of mainstream media will provide you all that about doing what we're going to, how we're going to sanction everybody. They don't mention, Mexico says, no. And I'll remind you, like I did last week, when Mexico voted for the resolution to condemn Russia at they were in the Security Council, they were asked for their reason, or asked if they wanted to say something. And they said, well, we think it's very important to protect the territorial integrity and sovereignty of countries. We, after all, in 1846, were invaded by the United States, and they took half our country, half. I thought that was kind of a big moment. The US media didn't pick up on it. The four-lane guys, the mainstreamers, who never miss anything, didn't think that was significant. I'll bet it was considered significant in Mexico. I bet it was kind of laughed about up and down our hemisphere, as a matter of fact. Did you see that the Mexican ambassador took the occasion to remind everybody that the United States invaded and took half their country? That's why he's voting for the American resolution, because he says, we really don't approve of invasions. So those are things that we need to remark on. We need to notice that if you actually raise your eyes to the horizon, as opposed to looking only at Washington, New York, Paris, London. You raise your eyes to the horizon, consider the opinion of other peoples of the world who are the vast majority of the world. This matter of Russia and Ukraine strikes them as, in their world, not the biggest thing that ever happened. It's big, they understand, and they understand the danger. But they have a word that is very popular in Africa and Asia and South America, and the word is hypocrisy. I'll give you an example of this that I was struck by. It's pointed out by several countries that Syria is presently the northwest corner portion of Syria, where their oil is currently occupied by the United States. Occupied. The oil is being taken, their oil is being carried away by the Americans. And they did not invite the United States. The United States simply entered their country. That's like a war. That's an aggression. But of course, they said, this is a little country, and we'll just put our eagle grip on it, and it'll look at us, but it won't attack us because it's a little country. and we can do this. And they did it. And you think the Arabs, the 1 billion Arabs, didn't notice that? They, as the African Union said, we asked you not to bomb Libya, because Libya was a major economic friend of Africa, Libya was the most developed and wealthiest country in the Middle East. And it was sharing, I should say North Africa, sharing some of its wealth with others. And Nelson Mandela said, you remember, Muammar Gaddafi is one of my best friends and one of the best friends of Africa. So the African Union said, please don't bomb that country. Please arrange dialogue and diplomacy and stop the fighting there. And they were ignored. It was considered amusing that the countries of Africa, all of them, the African Union, said, don't do it. Don't do that to Libya, a good friend of ours. Well, they did it to him. That was Obama. You always remember the liberals. These are liberals. Just as number one NATO expansionist was Bill Clinton, great liberal. By the way, he bombed Sudan once. Said he had hit a chemical, biological weapons plant. The man who owned the plant sued him and won, or didn't sue him, because Bill Clinton is, of course, he's like so many big shots, you can't sue them. At any rate, the guy sued the United States because that was a plant that was producing medicines, I forget of what type, and there was no disputing what it was, although the Americans lived for at least a year, 2 years. I don't know if they ever told the American people, not that American people want a year, but they have not, this hasn't really been shared around widely, that it was just a lie. And the American people were 90% in favor of bombing that attack on the chemical, the biological weapon plant, it turned out not to be, by Bill Clinton. So I'm going back to the word hypocrisy. It's kind of hard to get the countries of the South, the underdeveloped, or I should say developing now, I hope, developing countries, the victims originally of colonialism, have finally been independent, now find themselves always being matched up against Western banks, but fighting their way to development. When they get roughed up and invaded, nobody panics. Doesn't happen. So the word hypocrisy is around. And there's the one that I want to, and there's a cover of Time magazine from 1999, which provides an insight into America's mind. I should say, yes, Washington's mind. And as you know, Washington's mind is Canada's mind, because Canada doesn't have a mind. It has NATO, and it's a member of NATO. And as the Prime Minister likes to say, our allies, we'll talk to our allies, which is to say, I'll answer the phone. And this has to do with a new kind of dramatic story, although it's beginning to have a little problem. It's got a flat tire, because they wanted to emphasize that how shocking this is, and it is shocking, that a war is going on in Europe. And so several major reporters, major news outlets have had their guy in the battered hat and the flak jacket breathlessly talking. And he says, this is Europe, and these bad things are happening, Europe. And a couple of them went a little overboard and said, well, it's not Afghanistan, it's not Syria. I mean, this is effing Europe, you know. And one guy said that they have blue eyes and they kind of look like us. And who do you mean by us? I mean, has he ever been to the United States? I know he's an American, but did he ever visit? At any rate, so they say all this. And they talk about the brutality and how you know, it only leads to bad things. It probably does, bombings and warfare. He said that they say it leads to bad, terrible things. We can't have this going on in Europe. And it brings me back to Time Magazine, 1999. Here's the headline: "Bringing the Serbs to heel. A massive bombing attack opens the door to peace. A massive bombing attack opens the door to peace." So if you are US/NATO, you can bomb your way to peace. And matter of fact, bringing the Serbs to heel, massive bombing attack, leads to peace. That's when they're talking about themselves. They were really proud of that. By the way, Belgrade, for those who don't know, is in Europe. Apparently, most of the reporters don't know that Belgrade's in Europe, because they say this is the first major, you know, war since World War II. Well, actually, I had a footnote on that. I wasn't happy at the time, because Germany had a debate with itself, and the Social Democrats, wouldn't you know, decided that the right thing to do was to help bring the Serbs to heel. And so Germany, which everybody pretty much agreed ought not to leave home with it carrying a weapon, after that was sort of, that was one of the agreed things. They said, best that you don't do that. And they even put it in writing, don't do it. Well, they thought that they ought to help out. And of course they were encouraged. London encouraged them, Washington encouraged them, yes. And so German fighter planes, for the first time since World War II, participated in the massive bombing attack that opened the door to peace. So I guess it's not always true that massive bombing attacks go wrong, because that one, according to Time Magazine, that was September 1996, 99. I get my dates right when this happened. It was okay, and it was the right thing to do. They all agreed. again, this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. It's 89.5 FM. There's a couple of really interesting stories going on here in the background, and this is the blue highway report. There's a saying, and there is, everybody says there should be dialogue, and of course you look for, well, who could be the third party to help out? I haven't seen a lot of reporting on this, but there are two countries now who seem to be the designated possible elements who could help out on this front. And they are Israel and China. And I haven't, you know, I thought I would hear a lot of horse laughs from Ottawa and these places saying, oh, China, you got to, you know, you're pulling my leg. They all seem to be kind of respectful. I thank them for that, because that's not it. They're out of character when they do this, when they welcome it, or at least don't jump all over it. Although I did see a report on Sunday with a Western intellectual from Harvard or John Hopkins. And she said, we should pressure them to play a bigger role. And said, I want to just take a little sidebar and say, can you stop this stuff about pressuring? We're going to pressure so-and-so. We're going to sanction. I grew up in a neighborhood, and still do, of neighborhoods where pressuring people is not recommended. Respectful talk, respectful requests might get something done. But if some of these people seem to think they have big shoulders they don't have. They seem to think, to coin a phrase from the Bloc Québécois, They seem to think they have muscles they don't have. And also, most of them are non-combatants with no military background. So it kind of gets on my nerves when I hear people say, you got to, you know, put pressure on him. Well, you try that. It seems to be this idea that, a puffed up idea of who we are and how strong we are and what we can do. And apparently we could just flick a wrist and people fall down. It's true, little countries fall down. Big countries is not so likely. But at any rate, blessed are the peacemakers. And it's very striking. And I'm not seeing reporting on this. Prime Minister Bennett of Israel visited President Putin in Moscow on Saturday, tasked, and this was personal. I mean, one-on-one, three-hour personal conversation about how this matter might be resolved to the satisfaction of all parties. Not that all parties will be happy, but people will live and the fighting will stop. And yes, the political furniture will be moved around a little bit. And that's, I hate to bring it to people, but that's political, historical reality. It's not a Shazam movie or a Spider-Man movie or Batman, and we've just go and apply justice. That's in comic books. In the real world, if you don't want everybody to get killed, either locally or globally, you use your head and you talk to the parties. So there's just drumbeat here in the freeway media. They are telling us this continually, daily drumbeat about Putin, which they can do that if they wish. But they have to also explain why they want Mr. Bennett of Israel to spend so much time with Putin, and why, and are they glad or are they not, by the way? I'm not seeing a discussion. And again, same with China, because we spent so much time knocking ourselves out. There's not a member of parliament that practically that hasn't tore his shirt in a passionate speech against China in the past 6 months. They'd compete with each other to see what insulting language they can deliver there. But now there seems to be quietly a desire to ask China to use their good, as it's called, your good offices to help us solve the matter. And again, I say they don't knock it, but they don't champion it, which they should be doing. Here's a question. Why isn't Canada trying to use its good offices? Why doesn't, you know that everybody in the Western world practically has been on the phone to President Putin. And I mentioned Bennett. Bennett, he said he spoke to Putin, he spoke to Macron, he spoke to a really important guy named Schultz in Germany, because I don't know if you heard about Sergeant Schultz, but he's going to quadruple the military budget of Germany. That really warms the cockles of our heart, doesn't it? But he spoke, he made a point, like all peacemakers, he said, I'm talking to everybody, and everybody agrees with my good office here, so that he didn't have to take any flack, although he's going to take some flack for sure. But I'm asking, since Canada used to consider itself a peacemaker, how come we are the full-blooded tiger in this, and talking about the General Assembly didn't ask us to send any weapons to anybody. Actually, they asked us not to. The General Assembly of the United Nations said de-escalate. Why can't the prime minister, maybe the deputy minister, get on the phone and say, we would like to see this matter solved. We believe in the territorial integrity of Ukraine. We believe in its sovereignty. We believe you, we've even voted to condemn you. However, we now want to achieve the things we believe in. So I'm calling you to see if that would be possible, because other people are doing it. But apparently the Canadian Prime Minister has to ask somebody, I don't know who that would be, has to ask somebody if he can call to speak to the President of Russia. So Canada once had a reputation. I know this is ancient history to younger Canadians, and probably don't know this. Canada had a reputation. Whether it was well-earned or not is highly debatable. I refer you to the Eve Engler's books and writings about Canada the Good. However, there certainly was a time when Trudeau Père, if I got that right, the father, he used to call people up. He used to go and visit really important people. And he didn't apparently didn't have to go to NATO and sit in the waiting room and to see whether or not they'd give him a green light to do anything. We're talking here in Canada about arming and sanctioning and various other actions. I shouldn't say we, those who are betters, who lead us. When that is not what the General Assembly of the United Nations asked us to do. It didn't ask its members. Most of those UN General Assembly members are not part of the sanction game, actually. They weren't invited anyway because they're considered less than interesting people, less than, they're not the real people. You know that in the Spanish parliament, a guy stood up and said, we have to take Ukrainian refugees, but no Muslims. And he says, I have no problem saying that. And everybody said, yeah, right, okay. So that's, he's showing himself to be a sterling European. So again, I would say, why can't we play a peacekeeping, peacemaking, maybe even peacekeeping, who knows, peacekeeping role. Given the way the headlines from the truth industry, which is mainstream media, given their headlines, I would think there's probably a little chance for peace, because it seems to be about how we can rally some kind of new combative role. Maybe they're thinking now of throwing Poland in. You know, there is a view in Europe, widespread, that US and UK in particular seem to like to watch Europeans fight each other so that they can pick up the pieces. That's just a common view. I recommend you any good novel, any good history book. That's a fairly common view. And I don't think we're doing much to dispel that notion, because I see our representatives are asked, well, how about President Zelensky has asked for a no-fly zone, and I don't see any Canadian, U.S., UK elements saying they could do much on that front. So if you can't, and if you don't, and you won't, and you don't, et cetera, well, what role are you going to play? Are you going to continue to, along the line of talking about arming people, and to what end? What's going to happen to them? That question isn't asked here. I don't see any humility, anybody saying, I want a problem. And can we do something helpful? There's a story, by the way. I don't know if it's so, but it was printed in the I think it's the Times of Israel. I'm looking now. Don't want to get this wrong. It was pointed in the Daily Mail, the British paper. And they say that a peace negotiator for Ukraine, and they produce a picture of him. It's also printed, by the way, in the Israeli press. It's just I don't have the headline in front of me, but the Daily Mail says that he was murdered. And they had a picture of him. He was part of that. I've only seen one picture of these meetings. It was the one held on the border with Belarus. His name is Denis Kyriev. And he had been, they said Ukraine's defense ministry said Denis Kyriev, 45, killed during a defense operation. And then they have a second headline. The government called him a hero, but MPs of Ukraine said that he was suspected of treason, said he was shot and killed by Ukraine security services. And then they have a picture of him, the one that you've seen, if you saw, he's sitting at the end of the table. But I ask about this because I haven't seen mainstream media, who is the our trusted source of all information, and they never are wrong. They showed that picture that was seen in Canada. But they, at the time, by the way, when I saw the picture, I'm like anybody else. I said, who are the people sitting at the table? They didn't tell me at the time. But now, according to the Daily Mail and to Israeli media, I'm trying to remember which journal I saw it in, Mr. Kyriev was murdered. Because he was suspected of treason. Some say he was suspected of treason. Others say that he was just on a mission and is dead. I wish the Toronto Star, the Globe and Mail, somebody would tell me. They have reporters. The British paper Mail is respected, Daily Mail. So they have some of the same sources. Could you just tell us? Because let's put it this way, that's kind of dramatic. There are about five guys sitting at the table representing Ukraine, and there are four or five on the Russian side of the table. Incidentally, those talks are going on, although they don't seem very promising at this point, but they are going on. Here's some other things they report that there were three people killed, according. I'm just going to list the questions. They say that one of the official organs of Ukraine says that three were killed. Another detail about this individual is that while they say he was at the talks, and yes, that's him in the picture, Denis Kyriev, he wasn't officially part of the delegation. So, I mean, that's the kind of question that I find really fascinating. And doesn't the Star and the Globe have anybody who feels it's important to keep us informed to say, well, if he wasn't part of the delegation, why was he officially there? Why was he there? And again, could we clarify what happened? There seems to be a consensus. Perhaps not a consensus, it seems to be a divided opinion as the circumstances of his death. It's important. If people care about these things, a story like that might help us understand the bigger picture. You understand? Somebody part of a peace talks, if you say why or who, and somebody, a diligent writer for the Time, New York Times or the Globe, might reveal the bigger picture. What was that all about? Well, anyhow, we don't know. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 and FM. Our capacities are somewhat limited in getting to the bottom of that. I'm counting on the big shots in the mainstream media to flesh that story out. And there's, apropos of that business, we've had a little problem with our deputy minister. I call it an image malfunction. And that was the Toronto Star. Here's the headline, Toronto Star. Freeland scarf down. What an awful headline. Freeland scarfs down some controversy. Deputy Prime Minister reissued tweet after polarizing colors depicted in original photo. And she had, as you know, we had a big rally at Toronto City Hall. The mayor was there. Many prominent leaders, Canadian leaders, were there. And of course, centerpiece of that would be the Deputy Prime Minister. And she had her photograph taken with a number of people. And she tweeted one. And if you haven't seen it, she is standing in the middle, and there's a young person on one side and another on the other side. And they're holding a banner which has the markings associated with the, I will say, famous first and then / notorious Azov battalion. It's perhaps I got that wrong. It might have been the colors, the official colors of a Ukrainian nationalist organization which had collaborated during World War II with Germany. And they've been rather prominent, and those colors are seen widely. I remind you, in January 1st of this year, there was a march holding up torches, a torch march in Kyiv. And the people carrying the torches were celebrating the birthday of Bandera, who was one of the leaders of this group that had the colors red and black. They were celebrating his birthday. And two countries' embassies complained. I mentioned this last week. I think I should mention it again. Two countries said that really wasn't good because, in their opinion, Mr. Bandera was just the leader of violence against Jews and Poles, and seems to be a matter of historical record. And the Israeli embassy complained, and the German embassy complained because they're rather sensitive about these matters. The Canadian embassy did not complain. United States embassy, actually, for just the two. But it's kind of a, so in other words, you can use the word controversial. Controversial. So the Deputy Prime Minister was holding that, and it wasn't an accidental shot because she posted it. She tweeted it. Then she untweeted it. She took it down, indicating maybe somebody somewhere thought it wasn't the greatest idea to have to do that, to tweet it. I was struck by something that her office decided to, they had to explain this when, because there seemed to be a lot of interest in that. I urge you to follow. There's a lot of stuff being written about it. Taylor Report is the least informed on this. You look it up yourself. But her office said, well, this is classic KGB disinformation to talk about it. Well, okay, now wait a minute. So you're telling me that she is KGB because she posted it. KGB didn't post it. Incidentally, just for the historical record, there is no KGB. Somebody's in her office is suffering in the vapors. there is, of course, every state has police, secret police, even Canada. I swear, I think that's true. And so she posted it. She took it down, but they said it was classic KGB disinformation. So I, of course, I don't know. You have to go to the mainstream media. They know everything. But I do know if someone wrote to them and said, since you ran the piece, where is the picture so that we could all have a look? And that, you know, that message to the Toronto Star, source of the story, was the portion about where is the picture was deleted. So somebody is running interference, because that's what media do, making sure that wrong things aren't asked. And not only if they are asked, they're not discussed. They're deleted so that the public won't be troubled by a question like that, which, by the way, I have to tell you, every reader of every paper who sees a story where they said there's a salacious, awful, horrific photograph that appeared, and it was awful, it was graphic, it was, the reader once says immediately in his brain, her brain, hey, show me the picture. I mean, you know, let me be the judge. So if you don't run the photo, don't write a story about it, because all you're going to do is make your readers think you're kind of a shifty guy, because you tell them about something and apparently you think that if you just tell them, they'll go away and be satisfied. But you told them there was the picture and you didn't share the picture. So they know what you are. You're a creep. And you are doing something to try to help out the home team. That's good for you. Except that everybody notices. This is CIET, the Taylor Report. And further to our issue today, how to bring peace. And I've already mentioned that China, the two peace possible peacemakers, they say, are China and Israel. And I would like more reporting on that. I would like the Star and the Globe and the CBC to talk about this, about are we in favor of that or not? And the General Assembly said de-escalation. So is Canada in favor of de-escalation? I know that the NDP is not in favor of it. I know the Liberal Party is not in favor. The Conservative Party is not in favor. They're going to be rah, 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 because they're not over there fighting. So what the heck, they can go get them on Wisconsin. What are we doing to bring about a negotiated settlement that humiliates no one and protects the integrity of all the parties? And we're not doing it. And I think it's a horrible situation politically that we don't have voices, can't find our voice on this subject. We seem to be with those who are super sanctioning and also passing ammunition. Meanwhile, while saying the situation is a pretty rough between the sides, so if you're passing the information, I guarantee you somebody's going to get hurt, so good for you. Congratulations. You've really done your part. Here's an odd detail for listeners to Taylor Report and champions of anti-imperialism and defense of the smaller, I should say, the smaller countries, developing countries, who would get no sympathy at all when they're in a jackpot of this type. And by the way, they can chalk up the losses way up in the hundreds of thousands, in the case of Iraq, a million people, thanks to an invasion by the United States, which was never condemned. The New York Times is reporting that a U.S. delegation is visiting Venezuela. A high-level group from the State Department, et cetera, these are the demigods. This ain't the farm team. These are the real guys. As they are visiting Venezuela, and what's on their minds? Well, I mean, after they must be there to see, I'm sure you're a Canadian, you're listening, you think, well, they must be going to see President Guaido. That must be why, because, you know, you remember Chrystia Freeland and Trudeau always have their picture taken with the real president of Venezuela, Guaido, who, if you don't know, look it up, because everybody forgot about him. But we did name him president. We said he was the president. But at any rate, apparently they're not there to see Guaido. I break it to you. They're not there to see Guaido. They're there to see Maduro. Now, Maduro, according to our government, is he ain't there. But I'm sorry. He's very much there. And the Americans seem to be interested. I don't know if they're going to tell Canada whether to be interested or stay home and sleep or get lost or whatever. But you see, Venezuela has a lot of oil. And the cynical reading of this, by cynical reading, I mean mainstream media, is that they're going to give Venezuela a chance to get on board with the good guys by saying, well, we're not going to be getting more oil from Russia. We thought maybe you'd be interested in doing business. That's true. We have you under sanctions, and we're trying to choke you to death so that you can't have the kind of government you think you want, because the kind of government you think you want is not what we think you should want, so you can't have it. So they've been choking and kicking and invading and playing with and mussing the hair of Venezuela and calling Maduro the worst thing ever happened. Now they're having a visit, little visit. And yes, they are like gangsters. They're there, I suppose it's true, saying, all right, how about we shuffle the deck here and cut the cards, and I tell you what, we'd buy your oil, but you have to join us. Ain't gonna happen, because this isn't the first, as they like to say, in the West, this is not Maduro's first rodeo. They've been around that before. But, you know, the Americans maybe they're feeling a little sweat somewhere. I don't know. But maybe they'll be willing to cut some kind of arrangement. But it is interesting, isn't it, that they didn't go call on President Guaido. What do you know? And they said they'd like to talk. And they're talking with President Maduro. The president of Mexico, by the way, will pat him on the back for that, because he said, I recognize President Maduro. I know you have a little guy in your hip pocket who visits Trudeau, but he ain't worth 2 cents. So I'm telling you something. We're not going along with your sanctions, and we like Maduro, and that's that. And guess what? In Brazil, Lula, leader of the true democratic working class population of Brazil, he and Bolsonaro agree that they don't want anything to do with sanctions against the Russian. So does Brazil count? Yeah, I'd say it does if you have a brain. They do indeed, they count. Keep your eye on the Horn of Africa. Eritrea voted flat out against the General Assembly resolution because they said it's so damned hypocritical that they'd make them ill. Ethiopia abstained. Iraq abstained. Iraq lost 1 million people to an American invasion, which everybody here loved that invasion, just thought it was great. Stole everything they could steal from ancient artifacts and whatnot. In 2004, there's a nice picture of one of the major countries that was participating in the conquest of Iraq, and that was, guess who? It was Ukraine, had soldiers in Iraq. So while they might be sympathetic, they would like people to, they would probably have a memory. As you know, that's a problem. Memory gets you in a lot of trouble. But Iraq has a memory, I suspect. So we need, you know, I'll tell you about peacemaking. There's a Louisiana proverb, be humble and don't stumble. Everybody ought to just take a little step back and say, I wonder if we could have prevented this, and if we, and part of preventing it would have been a little less arrogance, a little less certainty. We were in a they called a unipolar world, and we had this unipolar hero, one of the Bushes, maybe both the Bushes and the Clinton. They thought, well, they will sort the world out, and they will have our, what's the expression they like to use, our values and rules of order and values. And they got a little drunk on the idea that they could have what they wanted, made a decision. Here's my question. Did the NDP, did the Liberal Party, I don't even know, Conservative Party, yes, Harper, I think Harper for sure, did they think it was a good idea to expand NATO to the east from where they were in 1997 to the east into the former Soviet republics, now independent, when they were told every time they did that, the further east, the more problems they might run into. I don't remember anybody debating that in Canada, standing up in Parliament and saying, in the name of peace and reasonable settlement of differences between states, either it's done between the states or at the United Nations or in some international forum, venue, where everyone's security is assured, because that's allegedly what it's always about, what it's about. And I want to know why this was thought of as smart, because to my mind, it was not, it's evidently not smart. And one of the problems with it is that states that are wondering, well, I wonder if I should do this, I wonder if I should trade with so-and-so, maybe we could work out a deal, they are influenced by that. And they say, well, Bill Clinton and the Bushes, and of course, going all the way back, Reagan, and now Obama and these people, they say, oh yeah, go for it. We're with you, we're behind you. You can count on us. And start talking about moving heavy weapons eastward. And lastly, I'd say, did it occur to you that if you push somebody, say, I'm going to push you, I'm pushing into the east, ever cross your mind that he might think, maybe I'll push to the west, maybe I should push back? Pushing. And on that last, I'll end on this point. Alexander Dumas was amazed when he opened his eyes one day in Paris in 1814, after Napoleon had been defeated, and he saw camels. And who were those guys? And the guys on the camels were part of the Russian forces. They were from way, way east, and they were riding their camels in Paris. And Alexander Dumas said, oh my goodness. we might be headed toward an oh my goodness moment here. We don't wise up and take the road of dialogue and de-escalation. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'll see you next week.